This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have TK Chianini. He's a chief technology officer at a company called InCircle. That's just the letter N and circle together, InCircle. Good morning, TK. How are you?
Good morning.
You know, Washington, D.C., we have all kinds of news of big dogs like this guy Howard leaving and this guy coming and all kinds of security issues. I thought we'd bring in someone who it's been down in the bushes, down in the weeds, and no security. And it's kind of fascinating that TK has a CISSP designation, which in many circles, that's very, very prestigious. I once talked to a technical guy about how to get that, and I just got scared thinking of everything he had to do to accomplish that. And you have to be renewed a very difficult kind of a background. But thought I'd bring him in, talk about continuous monitoring, talk about security and standards, especially some NIST standards to help my listeners figure out what kind of standards to use to secure their environment. But before we begin, maybe give us a little bit about your background and your name, Chianini. What a strange name here in Washington, D.C. And tell us a little bit about your company, please.
Yeah. Chianini is Hawaiian. I'm from Hawaii. So quick background. Spent the first 20 years of my life there. Professional musician. I thought I was going to grow up and do that. Yeah. I got messing around with computers. And that led me to game design. So I worked for a game company for several years. And that actually led me into security for some odd reason. Back in the day, you know, the security crowd and the gamer crowd were the same club. I mean, we hung out on BBSs and did our thing. So InCircle started shipping product in about 2001. The product we ship actually helps organizations manage their IT risk. And essentially what we try and do is we want to get you the information the bad guys want before the bad guys get it. There's a certain level of intelligence the bad guys need in order to basically trample through your network. Getting that information to you, being a part of that decision process and possibly taking action, you know, before the bad guys show up is the right time to do it.
Sounds like you're a person who actually knows what IRC is all about.
That used to be where everybody hung out.
Yeah, that's before people started to tweet.
Yeah.
They'd hang on IRC and all kinds of information got passed. I was telling my kids this. I said, you know, before 95, you'd type in commands to FTP things. My kids go, oh, no one ever typed in commands to FTP. Yes, you would, and IRC was just a variation on that. I remember it was released. It got very popular, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, I tweeted the other day about that. I was almost nostalgic. I was reminiscing on Twitter about the fact that there's no net splits anymore, and this used to be a big event in IRC where the actual infrastructure would fracture and then come back together, and that doesn't happen on Twitter anymore. And so,
if you study learning and learning behavior, many times they see parallels between mathematics and music. And many times mathematicians are strong in music in both ways. And I see the parallel here with security, with that type of reasoning being detail-oriented, methodical. And maybe that's why musicians like you can adapt to a very detailed-oriented word like security. I think that's the parallel. That's what I see.
I think so, too. I think I've always been drawn to a domain that has freedom for creative space. You know, being a musician, doing game design, I never stop playing games. I mean, security is a game. So so applying that there's so much talent in our industry. And it's changing so quickly. It's just really stimulating.
See, I don't think the bad guys are going to go to university in Prague and get a degree in attacking systems. They're going to be very creative and dynamic and moving and flexible. And so you can't combat a knife with a knife. You have to have a gun. You have to have something different or faster. And I don't know how else to do it besides being flexible and using game-type systems to combat it.
Very true. And again, recognizing this is an information space. So these are things that are weightless. And it's changing so fast, you can't institutionalize the knowledge to put it into a craft, to put it into an educational system. You just have to learn as you go. I mean, every day I am just, you know, my jaw hits the floor because something new has come out.
So creative. Let's go from weightless to something weighty. NIST, folks up the road here, bunch of smart folks. They're responsible for standards on measuring things and weights and all kinds of things. They have standards for security, and you and your organization have been involved with NIST for several years now. Is that right?
Yeah, over a decade. And with MITRE, you know, all of these people working towards a way, you know, the customer problem is really in security, one where you're trying to get multiple vendors to work together with multiple products. NIST recognized this early on and wanted to put together protocols whereby all of these manufacturers would work together. And that's been working on that for quite some time.
And the difficulty, I think, is even if you could herd the cats and get a standard in place in the United States, what about the international community? And how do those standards, how do they interplay with American standards? And who's better, who's worse, who is, you know, in the world of standards, it's very important. I mean, I don't know if listeners know this or not, but in some communities, a standard can be 500 pages long. it's not just, hey, whip up a standard before you go to lunch today.
That's right. And, you know, the NIST realized at some point in time, it really had to reach a certain level of maturity to where the vendors got it. And everything was working. Now the transition really is from NIST to the IETF. So IETF is I'm a part of a project right now where NIST and other people are trying to get these SCAP standards to be adopted by the IETF, which is going to be a more international body to basically be the stewards for these protocols.
International Engineering Task Force. It's right in the name, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So SCAP, perhaps you could define that for some of our listeners. Some know about it, some don't.
Security Content Automation Protocol. It contains essentially an identification scheme and a bunch of protocols that allow for security products to interoperate. So if you're a vulnerability scanner, you can output your findings in a certain format so that a management system would be able to take it in, some kind of workflow. You can interoperate with intrusion detection systems. There's just so many different things in security. It's not like, you know, if you were to do a parallel to, let's say, data networking, they got it easy. I mean, basically, you got a packet. It's always the same format. You get it from point A to point B. With security, you have things like security events. You have a vulnerability. Wait, you have an application. Now, was that application Windows or was it Win? Or was it Win7? Oh, wait, what should I call it? You know, matching on the syntax is not going to be sufficient when we're looking for this level of precision of interoperability. So NIST solved a lot of those problems with SCAP. Now it's just about getting it to an international body so that we can actually have it more widely adopted.
I think Americans must think that some of the malicious code out there is only directed at Americans or American companies, American government. I don't think that's true at all. I think a lot of the malicious attack go from, instead of A to B, it could be C to D to D to E. I mean, it's not just us.
Yeah, so true. So true. I mean, I don't even know where to paint those boundaries.
There's no more boundaries, that's for sure. When we get back, I think I'm going to talk about this new event called Flame. I don't know what it is. It's a virus, and a lot of people are writing. I'm going to talk, maybe compare it with this Mac virus called Flashback and see what InCircle has to say about it, and maybe some guidelines for federal listeners to find out how to prevent getting hit with this new type of malware. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have TK Chianini, who's the CTO at a company called InCircle.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during the big summer sale now through July 21st. You'll save 30% on their popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit them at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch their top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
I'm Kurt Krause, General Manager of the National Conference Center in Leesburg, Virginia. Recent overspending by the GSA has triggered drastic meeting and travel restrictions that are short-sighted. The fact is, most government departments spend sensibly. Training is critical for every organization's success, including the government and our military. These sweeping changes will negatively impact our industry and the economy. See my letter in the Washington Post advocating long-term solutions, not short-sighted reactions. And for responsible meeting options, visit conferencecenter.com.
Paid for by the National Conference Center.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Tony Leone, VMware Federal Business Development Specialist for GovConnection, on a recent client virtualization solutions panel discussion sponsored by GovConnection, HP, and VMware.
One of the things that desktop virtualization can offer is a longer life cycle out of those products. Instead of having to worry about what is the most current processor, will it work with these applications? Because we're consolidating that into the data center and just delivering a screen scrape or display to that end user, we can get a longer life cycle out of those universal laptops. Now it's no longer in 3 years or 2.5 years or whatever your life cycle refresh rate is, can we potentially double that?
VMware View helps federal IT leaders comply with the Telework Enhancement Act, meet COOP initiatives, and solve the access control dilemma. HP Thin clients have been certified to work with VMware View Manager. This end-to-end solution allows you to simplify desktop management, reduce costs, improve data protection, and promote compliance. GovConnection is your one-stop resource for all of your IT projects. Visit govconnection.com/federalVDI for more details today.
Wondering how to meet the cloud first or shared first initiatives? Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VCE VBlock systems tightly integrate and pretest technology from cloud leaders Cisco, EMC, and VMware to get you to the cloud faster, so you can share services and information and easily provision resources while safeguarding proprietary applications and data.
Make VCE your first choice for cloud first. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have TK Kianini. He is the CTO of a company called InCircle. We're talking about network security. If you look this fellow up on Twitter, you find out he's a musician, he's a video game sound designer. He's also a CISSP, which is kind of a fast and big. It's like these guys in the NFL who are 300 pounds and can run 4.240s. Kind of a strange combination of skill sets here. So we're talking about all kinds of aspects of security. So what exactly does InCircle do, and how do they have any application for my listeners?
InCircle produces a product suite that essentially gets you the information on managing IT risk, whether it be vulnerabilities or configuration management. These are things that you want to know prior to the bad guys knowing it. giving you an opportunity to remediate or mitigate these risks, and essentially socialize that information across your organization so that you can become more and more secure over time.
So you would be able to look for logged in activities, check for success in patch management, maybe do a vulnerability scan. Is that the activities you do?
Yeah. Yeah, all of the above. I mean, you know, again, there's a set of information that the adversaries are going to want to know prior to their execution of some kind of attack. The person that should know that first are the people managing those targets. And you have to prioritize them because the lists are quite long. And you basically want to tear down each day, you know, less and less exposure. You want to close the aperture of that risk.
I have heard that there are 100,000 new malware pieces of code out there every day. Does that seem high? It seems pretty high to me. 100,000?
Yeah, it's the count. You know, the thing that makes that count a little wonky is the some of them are polymorphic. They actually change, and so do you count that as one, or do you count that as a variety, 10,000 varieties each day? So that's a little bit funny with the numbers, but malware is, you know, it's a real threat. I mean, it's been effective for cybercrime. It's been effective for spies.
That's great.
Nation state.
I was driving here, and my next-door neighbor had a newspaper delivered, and I thought that was very quaint to actually read a newspaper, the Washington Post. But I'm sure if you pick up the Washington Post today, you will find the story of a virus coming out of the Middle East called Flame. And all kinds of different reports on this. It was found by this fellow in Europe named Kaspersky or something. Tell me about, what do you think of this? Is this something serious? Is this something, well, what's the most surprising thing? How afraid are you of this? That's the real question.
It's definitely a real threat, and let's say this: it's a well-engineered piece of software. The applications that make up what is known as Skywiper is what makes up Flame or Flamer, or in this case, you know, Win32.Flamer. All of these things, the purpose of the software is different than some of the malware prior. In the sense that it's all about the exfiltration of information that would be useful to nation state. So, you know, who they target and what they're after is going to be very different. And because of those aspects, you're going to see some metrics on these things be large and some of them small. For instance, there's been criticism about it not being a big deal because frankly, it only went after 200 machines, 300 machines,
mm-hmm.
When compared to, let's say, some of the other malware out there. Well, is that the right way to count it, though? I mean, what if those 200 or 300 machines were exactly the right machines to get exactly the right information? Then the number is quite meaningful.
And how long has it been out?
Yeah, the reports I read essentially said that this thing was, you know, living out there and evolving for 5 to 6 years. Now, that's a long time. I mean, we're talking about people writing code and revising code, just like, you know, regular applications that come out professionally, 1.0, 2.0, 3.0.
Patch fixes.
Yeah, exactly. They got to fix their own bugs, too.
You know, if you read about this, you find out that this is 20 megabytes. And we talked about IRC. We were silly about that. But back in the days of floppy disks, you had a 1 megabyte floppy. That was 20 floppy disks. That was a lot of information. So this is not any small piece of code, 20 megabytes.
I know. And, you know, relatively speaking, it really astonishes me. I mean, these days, you know, you press that shutter on your digital camera and it's kicking out a photo that's 20 megabytes. Right. I mean, 20 megabytes nowadays is like floating around your hard disk like it's a small piece of information, which is crazy. I remember having the biggest hard drive, which was 20 megabytes.
I remember before then, too. I can remember paper tape backup. That's how far I go back. So Flame, you think it's serious. And but for most of us, we don't have to worry because it seems to be so precisely targeted. Why would it worry about someone in Kansas? It looks like it's targeted mostly for servers in the Middle East. Am I mistaken?
That's right.
Or am I being naive here?
No, you're looking at it actually in holistically, which is the people that, let's say, authored the suite of applications that make up Flamr had a very specific purpose. Now, let's you know, extrapolate from there. Let's say that somehow the source code for this were to leak, and it would fall into hands of some other organization, some other threat agent, let's say cybercrime. Now, what would stop, frankly, you just, you know, tweaking that a little bit so that, and you know, it's now going to be on home user machines, taking banking information, taking, you know, identity information, your Twitter, your Facebook, you know, all of the login password credentials, and then using it for something other than just stealing PDFs or things that we've seen so far with Flamr.
When I think about threats, I think about people going to the cloud and standards. We go back to NIST, and NIST had some standards that were set in stone for many years, and all of a sudden they were trying to respond to a new dynamic environment, so they come up with managing risk in a different way. Let's talk about this NIST 800-37. Were you involved in that? Could you maybe talk about our audience about that and how that applies?
Yeah, there's a whole ecosystem of standards all that work together. I didn't personally work on 800-37, but there are other special publications that deal with the SCAP standard. Again, that would be 800-126.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, at the instrumentation level, these things have to plug together. You know, when manufacturer A wants to plug into manufacturer B, there has to be a certain amount of protocols that are interoperable. When that happens, then you can go ahead and get a program, sort of a organization-level program like 800-37, and put it across all your instrumentation. But frankly, the output of one instrument essentially has to be compatible with the input of the other.
I've read all kinds of reports about federal agencies and compliance. There was an OMB report that came out that said didn't give a very good percentage of agencies that were compliant with FSMA. And the main issue that kept coming up agency after agency was continuous monitoring. That seems to be the big challenge. That seems to be the bottleneck there, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a big one. You know, when... on some levels, it's really simple, which is changes happening on your network at a certain rate. And the whole concept of continuous monitoring is if you want to represent that change over time, you essentially have to have a sampling rate, you know, taking a picture every so often.
Just like the old audio samples.
Exactly.
Bang, 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 bang.
Exactly.
Sitting next to a river in the bucket of water. I know that analogy.
It is just that, because signal theory has everything to do with representing change. Continuous monitor is a really good way to frame how to do that with the changes that are happening in your IT infrastructure. And it, you know, it just makes sense. Frankly, you can't just go take a snapshot once a year and expect to have a good representation of your risk.
In many different worlds. When we get back, talk more about cybersecurity and federal applications, maybe talk more about malware and what my listeners can do to prevent it. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have TK Chianini, CTO, at a company called InCircle.
How does the current budget environment challenge your mission? What roles do mobility and innovation play in meeting your goals? Tune into Transforming Business Operations at the Defense Department. Hear Gino Magnifico, CIO of the Army Contracting Command. Mark Goodage, Chief Technology Officer for the Military Health Systems. Terry Edwards, Army ASA ALT, Director of the Office of the Chief Engineer and CIO. And Tim Solms, General Manager of the Department of Defense at Microsoft. Transforming Business Operations at the Defense Department. Made possible by Microsoft, Friday at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Peter Suyama of Ameriprise and a specialist in retirement and succession planning for businesses. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Supporting our troops has never been more important, and the military's need for strategic procurement decisions has never been stronger. Smart sourcing begins with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your command's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your mission, visit gsa.gov/ACQMPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQMPM.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How do we enhance national competitiveness? What about getting big things done in government? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out. Hear from government executives such as Gene Dodaro, Michael Astrew, Admiral Robert Papp, Aaron Connaughton, Tish Long, and Steve Kemp next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A, provided by RSA, the Security Division of EMC. With us is Patrick Carey, Director of RSA Incident Response. How can security teams take their organizations to the next level?
Many of our clients are taking a wider view of security management. They use NetWitness for threat detection, monitor sensitive data through RSA DLP, and streamline incident management processes with RSA Archer.
Does this help continuous monitoring efforts?
Yes, RSA provides the right strategy as cyber threats evolve.
Find out more at RSA.com.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune Magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. United Healthcare.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have TK Chianini. He's a CTO of a company called InCircle. That's just the letter N and then circle, incircle.com. You can go there, get all kinds of information. They've won all kinds of awards. You see there's 6,500 customers. They're in a lot of different applications. They're just about everywhere. And we're talking about federal applications here. We talked about standards. And if I ask this question, many of my listeners read blogs and they want to subscribe and maybe want to pursue this a little further. Where do you blog and where can my listeners get more information?
We have a community up there on the net, connect.ncircle.com. In the blog section, I have a blog called Patterns, where I talk about everything from gaming to security to all kinds of things that I get obsessed about. There's all of our researchers are also publishing there. So it's a great place to kind of go through and search and find what you need. You can also join the forums and start talking about, you know, whatever you want to talk about. If it has to deal with security, then, you know, we're passionate about it, and we'd like to talk to you.
I know an individual in Fairfax who dropped out of engineering school to spend more time playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. He didn't think the engineering school was challenging enough.
Yeah,
and he thought the games were, which is kind of a fascinating concept here.
Yeah, online gaming, I mean, online gaming has a lot of the dynamics that you need to succeed in this world. Everybody's, you know, geographically dispersed. You have to organize fast. There's people shooting at you. I mean, there's a lot of things in that world that I think directly apply to startup and to, you know, the sort of the new economy of information.
There is a popular acronym in this town full of acronyms. One acronym is APT, Advanced Persistent Threat. Now, when I first heard about it, I thought an APT was written by some guy in a basement in Ukraine. And then it really is a whole lot more than that. It's an advance because it's not just one person. It's big organizations. Maybe you can talk about APTs and put it in perspective. And how does an APT compare with these old silly viruses like Conflicker and Code Red?
Yeah, if we go back, I think, far enough, we see a lot of machines fighting machines. We see a lot of autonomous code going after machines. And then the defenses were also machine-oriented defenses. And that machine-to-machine thing, you know, made sense for a long time. There was a term called structured threat versus unstructured threat.
That's where it started, yeah.
That was, the Secret Service used that language a lot. And I think it describes APT very well. Structured threat is going to have, you know, a profile of an adversary that's talented, they're patient, they're not about the smash and grab. They frankly want to get in, and they may want to stay dormant for a while. Completely different profile. What they're after is very different, and so their motives. So, you know, APT right now essentially is getting a lot of news with the hacktivists and also with nation state threat. I would also say, you know, organized crime is stepping up their game with their malware. There's a Zeus family of malware that is just
crime goes, yeah.
It's just nasty. But everybody's using IT. Right, they're using IT to basically be a force multiplier for whatever their cause is.
And if you're listening to this sometime later on in the year, TK presented at the DGI Cyber Conference, and you could probably Google that and get more information. The title of his talk was Motivation and Intent, Getting the Right Perspective on APTs. So you're going to be in front of a tough crowd here in a couple of days, aren't you, talking about APTs, a lot of federal IT professionals. And they're going to ask these basic questions. Well, is Flame an APT, or is this a one person? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know if we have enough information on Flame to describe it as an APT, do we?
Certainly APT.
Mm.
The thing has been undetected for 5 to 6 years. I mean, that's definitely persistent in my book. It actually didn't want to go seen. And frankly, I think the only reason, you know, it basically got into the limelight was, you know, basically propagated outside of its target audience. For some reason, a computer was, you know, it was found somewhere else than the Middle East, which was apparently its target.
Interesting. CAO.com did a survey on security. And a fellow there named Keith Corbin, he talked about internal versus external threats. This Flame sure sounds like an external threat. Check. We can go down the malware. External threats, fine. So big, SaaS or Confra, external. What do you think about internal, external? I mean, if one of my listeners is charged with security for an agency, they call it CISO in this town, what are you going to put your resources, internal, external?
What does that mean anyway?
I mean, someone working for you, I think what it means.
Well, when are you internal, external these days?
And I mean, government contractors coming in sight.
And people having mobile phones and people having tablets and people, I mean, it is very hard. At one point in time, it was easy. When you went to work and you had all this great resources there, 9 out of 10 times, you know, the people at home have just as much bandwidth. They're still working. You know, what is internal or external anymore? I think it's really hard to hold that line and have the productivity to stay competitive if you're still sort of building that old fortress?
Well, my daughter is an intern at a local security company, and she does all her work at home. And she's a remote worker. And what interesting kind of lesson she learned, she said a lot of times if a person's sitting at a desktop computer and a threat comes in, they will ignore it. But if they have a mobile device, they're doing something else, they're walking down the street, threat comes in, they may hit it and have malicious code downloaded easier than a desktop because it's just a different environment. So is that internal, external? I don't know how to define it either.
I don't know. And, you know, what happens when you then, you know, get that mobile device and reconcile it with your desktop, and then your desktop is a last laptop, and then it goes back into work. So, you know, it again, at one point in time, it was so easy to say, you know, this is company resource, you're internal. And it's just not that easy these days.
Land of acronyms, BYOD, bring your own device. Mobile devices just throw even more questions into this mix, don't they?
They do. I mean, it's a double-edged sword with no handle.
I mean, pick it up, you're going to get caught.
Yeah, and so, you know, the idea is, you know, people have to actually have a policy around devices. You know, they may for those devices that they know they can manage the IT security risk, maybe there's a lot more, you know, authorization to resources. And for the ones that, frankly, are hard to manage and they don't have a whole lot of control, maybe there's only a few things they can get to. But, you know, you do need to have a policy because it's happening.
Yeah, BYOP, bring your own policy. That's a change that has to take place as well. You know, I've spent some time in the third world, and many listeners here, State Department, even into remote areas of the world, and you appreciate electricity. I mean, you really appreciate water and electricity and safety. And I think Americans are starting to understand that the IT attacks may not just be limited to servers. They may be attacking the smart grid as well. Is that true?
You know, certainly everything that it has information technology is going to be a target. And, you know, there's real bad guys out there. It's not like the days where when we started doing all this security research, it was more like ham radio. You know, we just helped each other and we did cool things and we shared it. And then the bad guys showed up. And there's real bad guys out there. And frankly, they were bad guys before the internet. So it's that crowd, actually, that has kind of messed things up. And they're just getting smarter because they know, frankly, from their armchair in another country, they may be able to get at some U.S. infrastructure. And we just have to go into the game knowing this. We need to make sure we, you know, manage the risk of what is information technology.
And if it can attack the smart grid, it can. And your company in Circle has been involved with working with standards to try to ameliorate some of that possibility. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, any endpoint on the network that's running IP can be assessed with our product. And again, like I said before, I mean, you want to know the bad information before the bad guys know it. It gives you a chance to basically, again, accept the risk or remediate it or mitigate it somehow. But when you don't want to know about it is frankly, you know, when you're mopping up some malware incident.
Risk management. I normally associate risk management with financial situations. They talk about fiduciary responsibility and risk management, but I think that term can be applied in the world of IT as well. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk more about some Twitter feeds and give you a little survey to find out if you're actually a card-carrying nerd or not. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is T.K. Chianini. He's the CTO of a company called N, the letter N, Circle. Thank you.
Here's Craig Carpenter, Army veteran and advocate for disabled veterans, on the Gateway to Veterans Health and Wellness panel.
I can't say it enough, is that it's very important to me and has been instrumental in my life as well as to all veterans that I deal with on a daily basis. And for those that are not signed up, you need to sign up. It would do nothing but enhance and make your life better.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
My Health eVet, VA's personal health record, helps veteran patients actively participate in their health and well-being. If you're a VA patient, consider upgrading your account today at myhealth.va.gov. With an upgraded account, veterans can securely access personal health records online 24/7.
An upgraded account offers secure messaging, which strengthens the partnership between veterans and your healthcare team. To learn more, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. Take control of your VA healthcare.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Excess to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
Jerry Reynolds, manager IT operations at USPS, commented during the panel discussion, protecting and securing your data in a virtual world.
We've taken progressive steps. We went through the mainframe. We went through the Sun. Now we're virtualizing on the x86 platform. And for us, to your point about server virtualization, I think we're currently at about an 8-to-1 ratio, and we're driving to almost a 40-to-1 ratio with some of the new bigger hardware that's coming up.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword virtual.
The right virtualization strategy can take you from static infrastructure silos to an automated high-density cloud that transforms IT service delivery. And the path goes straight through business-critical virtualization. Symantec has the backup, recovery, and security solutions you need to protect your virtualized environment with confidence. For the top 10 tips on protecting a virtualized environment, visit www.virtualbackupplan.com. Symantec, confidence in a connected world.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
According to leading research analyst firms, servers are just one part of the virtualization story. Your agency can realize the full promise of a truly virtualized environment by integrating virtual server storage and a virtual desktop infrastructure, but only if they're from NetApp. And delivered by NetApp partners like Swish Data Corporation, Swish Data ensures the performance, affordability, and security of your agency's data infrastructure. Learn more at netappgov.com.
It is not every day you have access to the chief financial officer, but on July 19th, you'll have the opportunity to meet these key decision makers face to face. Come meet the top CFOs of our region at the Washington Business Journal's CFO of the Year Awards. Join us Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington for a spectacular lunch and invaluable networking. Go to washingtonbusinessjournal.com/event to reserve your spot.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have TK Chianini. He's the CTO of a company called InCircle. That's the letter N, circle.com. For more information, you can go to blogs at connect.incircle.com. You can read his blog. He even has a Twitter feed. He's up to speed here. What is your Twitter feed, TK?
It's at TKianini, at TKEANINI.
Real simple. And my Twitter handle's at Ray Gilray. I'll be tweeting about this, and my blog is at my company site, Armature. I'll even post a picture of this character and talk a little about this interview and maybe some links back to his blog and back to his tweet so you can interact with him sometime down the road. This is a point in the show where each of my guests have to do a 10-question test to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. So here's the questions. Year you bought your first computer?
81.
81, that's respectable, yeah. First cell phone?
Oh, boy. I had a ham radio before that.
Oh, that's big nerd points, by the way. That's huge big nerd points.
Yeah. That would probably be in 93.
Well, you lose points for 93. You gain points for being in ham radio, that's for sure.
There was a point where I had a 2-meter radio and a packet radio on my waistline. On a utility belt. I was like Sputnik
like
walking.
Batman.
Yeah.
We have a Twitter feed. We know that. We have a blog. We know that. What kind of online personal backup do you use?
Online personal backup? Assortment of stuff. I started using Amazon's cloud with S3, and I just wrote my own tool. But I use Dropbox and things of that nature.
Okay, a smartphone do you have?
iPhone 4S.
And number of apps on that?
35 that all need updating every week.
35. And what kind of tablet device do you have?
I actually have a Galaxy.
Whoa, there's your outlier.
Yeah, it complements this phone very well.
And what social networking sites do you participate in?
Like I said, I spend a lot of time on connect.incircle.com, but Facebook, Twitter, some secret IRC and Silk servers sometimes.
Whoa, but, we know about those. And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Would be electronic.
Electronic. Well, I'll put that through my UNIVAC computer in my basement. It's taking up 4 rooms, and we'll come up with a rating for you and find out your level of nerdosity. But ham radio, wow. You know, there's Radio Relay League. Isn't there an association for that? ARRA, is that what it is?
ARRL.
ARRL, that's Amateur Radio Relay League, yeah. Mm-hmm. Big, big, big in this town. A lot of people in the intelligence community are associated with that, and I'm not going to say anything more because I want to live. Let's talk more about security and risk management. I think we left off talking about risk management, and I thought, geez, risk management's applied a lot to financial situations. But in this context, risk management is applied to security, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, we always think of risk management from the victim standpoint, which is very real. You know, essentially, you have to understand what your vulnerabilities are and, fix what you can. But you have to have a certain intelligence about what the threat environment is and, you know, who's after you, what they're going after. The interesting thing is that the bad guys are also doing risk management. You know, I mean, they basically don't want to get found. You know, they don't want to be
and
seen.
And this flame was successful at that.
Absolutely. I mean, a 5-year stint, that's a long time. So the idea there is you have to understand that from their perspective, they're managing risk. They don't want to be seen. They don't want to do things that are abrupt or, you know, basically bring them into focus. So your job is essentially to raise the cost. You want to raise the cost to make yourself less feasible than everybody else. And that's a perspective that not a lot of people have yet.
So it's a grayscale, not a black and white scale. It's like lock your car because the guy down the road, the car's open, it's going to be more vulnerable than yours. And
that's right. That's exactly right.
I'd like to say there's black and white here. Many of my listeners, I'd like to have black and white, but there's this fuzzy world of, well, you know, you're going to get beat. It's just that what are you going to get beat at?
Yeah. And again, you know, what does loss mean? You know, what are they after? What does it mean if it's, again, it's hard in the information space. You know, somebody steals your car, you go out, there's no car there. Somebody steals this really important PDF, you still have that PDF. So this idea of non-rival goods, you know, where if you take it from me and it's stolen, I still have it. People are still wrapping their heads around that.
Yeah. What was the phrase? Non-what?
Non-rival good.
Non-rival good.
A rival good is, you know, if I sell you a cheeseburger, I have one less cheeseburger. A non-rival good is what the information space is all about, which is in economics, it's really tough for us to account for non-rival goods because, frankly, I still have it. So, you know, things like the cryptographic methods that go into digital right management, you're essentially trying to mathematically create a rival good for something that is essentially a non-rival good.
That gets pretty theoretical. There are people who write about security. One fellow's named Brian Krebs. What kind of reputation does Brian have?
Love the guy.
That's an endorsement.
I met him at a CanSec West conference a long, long time ago. And there are a few reporters that that the security researchers let to their inner circle. Rob Lemos is one of them. Brian Krebs another. They take the time to know. They take the time to learn. They're sincere. They talk to the researchers. They respect the researchers. And in the case of Krebs, I mean, he's gotten a lot of inside information, even on the bad guy side. And he does great reporting on cybercrime.
You know, when he wrote for the Washington Post, I thought he was very insightful and very thorough and detail-oriented. And it was a great forum for that because the Washington Post gives it's a great audience there. And when they let him go, I just thought that was tragic. I disagreed with that, but hey, things happen, and I'm glad that Brian is well respected in that field. I've gotten out of that, but in he was dealing, of course, with end users mostly then. I think he's made a transition to corporate type.
Yeah, and in fact, I just saw in one of his feeds that there might be a movie coming out that he's in. Hmm. It's called something like Day Zero or something, and it's funny, they're accepting donations to like an open source movie almost. It's a great. I saw some clips. I mean, I sent in some money. I can't wait to see it.
An open source movie, that's pretty funny. Well, TK, you've certainly had a wide range of experiences. You're raised in Hawaii, musical background, also a CASSP, and you can go in and fight the folks up at NIST, letter for letter, phrase for phrase, paragraph for paragraph. Where's this going to head? Where's this going to head the next 4 or 5 years? Should I just unplug all my computers and climb into a hole? How much money? Are we going to spend $100 to protect $5 worth of goods, whether it's a rival or a non-rival good? I mean, where's it going to end?
Oh, on the standard side, I think that trajectory is pretty clear to me. What is national needs to go international. So the writing's on the wall there, and hopefully we can be effective with the same sort of objective of interoperability at the international scale. That's where that's going.
So is it going to be IETF leading there, or what organization is going to lead?
That is the best organization to lead this effort. I mean, we are talking about an organization that makes the internet work.
And where are they based?
Everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, they are everywhere. They basically have, most of them have their meetings virtual. But you're in a particular working group and you drive a certain standard forward. And it's basically roll up your sleeve and get it done.
I can remember years ago when they came up with that MP3 standard, there was someone in an office in Paris, and down the hall they came up with MP3, and I keep thinking of geographical locations because I'm stuck in my ways. So there really isn't a geographic center for something, I guess. It's too virtual, but they must have annual meetings or conferences or something.
Yeah, they have, I think, one or two annual meetings. But that's where standards is going. And in terms of security, I mean, that book is being written every day. I mean, it really is. I mean, where it's going, I think, to project out, we can see, the threat as being cybercrime, nation state, and hacktivists. I think those are good categories because we know what they're after. In terms of their methods, that is constantly evolving. Why? Because there's so much talent in this industry.
Is this Assange guy considered to be just a joke in your world, or where's he ranked?
He's an old schooler. I mean, there was a point in time where I ran some. He wrote a little piece of code called Strobe a long time ago, and so he's code writer, and now he's on to bigger things. But he's definitely been in the community for quite some time.
Hmm. Interesting. We'll have to have you come back here later on this year, talk more about some of the changes. I'm sure flame may flame up or may flame out, or it may come back to haunt many of my listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about network security with TK Chianini, CTO of a company called Incircle. Thank you, TK.
Thank you.
been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.